Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now look here, pull into that service station. I need a sarnie.
Okay, and I, in the meantime, will get onto my Radiomobile radio here and try and carefully tune in to
Jules and Jim's Joyride.
Yes, terms and conditions apply. Welcome to this very special podcast where we have a very special guest indeed. A man that I have been longing to meet for a long time, and now my dream comes true because my co-host, Jim, is introducing me to Joe Pasquale.
Here's Joe.
Listen, do you know how exciting this is? Because I've been on my own for the past 14 months and my neighbour's been all right, so I might just start talking and not shut up at all. Can I just continue about Noel Edmonds?
We were just talking about Noel Edmonds because I said, and I think this is true, that Noel Edmonds had his own water supply, which he bottled and sold as posh water from Blobbyland. Yeah. What, was it called Blobby Water?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it was called. I wouldn't buy it, though, if it was Blobby Water.
I rather like the idea of Blobby Water. I'd rather like that.
Apparently, he's got millions and millions of gallons of petrol all stored up on his land somewhere in case there's like a zombie apocalypse and they can all go, oh, let's go around and he'll start flogging your
petrol. Well, I always thought he was sensible, but I didn't realise he was that clever. That's very good.
Well, isn't that dangerous?
Well, I think he's quite dangerous.
What about if he stood out in his field having a fag or smoking his pipe?
But presumably it's all underground. It's not just in some old baked bean tins sloshing around.
So. You know, petrol goes off though, doesn't it?
What would you have in your bunker, Joe?
What do I have? Wine gums.
I think it's all you need.
I like the yellow ones, which isn't a popular choice.
No, Neve said it. It's good. I don't know. Is it light? Are they lemon ones or what? Are they pineapple? What is it?
I don't think any of those things taste like what they're supposed to taste like.
And I think if you were blindfolded, they all taste the same, I think.
Yeah.
Have you done that challenge?
No, I've done hooded tasting. I do have hooded tasting of wine gums and wine, actually. Yeah.
Oh, have you? That's good. Yeah. Wine.
When I was at school, when I was 11, my teacher, Mr. Dixon, who was in the Second World War, he was a World War II fighter pilot ace, and he had a huge handlebar moustache. But on the end of his nose, he had a really long hair, about 3-4 inches long. And we did that black tasting thing. So you close your eyes, hold your nose. So when he closed his eyes and held his nose, I thought it was an opportunity for me to snip off his hair.
Did you?
Which I did snip it off. And then when he opened his eyes, he said, "Who snipped off my hair?" And everyone pointed at me and said, him. So I got the slipper in front of everyone else.
The slipper?
No.
Yeah. Well, this is like Tom Brown school days. You've got the slipper.
Yeah.
That's how long you're in olden days time now.
If you got it, he said, "We're going to give you 6, but if you rise up from your incumbent position before the 6 is finished, you go back to the beginning." And I used to think it was hilarious. It didn't hurt me. It would have hurt if it was me dad.
Yeah.
Or me mum or dad, you know, because it was something personal then. But with the it didn't bother me.
Incumbent as well. It's a great word.
But going back to, how did you first meet one another?
We met in the jungle. I'm a celebrity.
Was that the first time we met?
First time,
Because
you came in about 4 days after me and Nancy went in, right? And everybody was speculating. We knew there was somebody else coming in going, "Who is it?" And I kept saying to Nancy, "It's Jim, isn't it? Jim's coming in." She went, "No, it's not." She lied for her right teeth. I knew it was you because I was making a double bed. I went, "Somebody else is, who else is going to sleep in here?" He said, "Well, I'm going to go." "Well, it's Jim then, isn't it?" She went, "No, it's not." And of course, he turns up. We'd been there for 4 or 5 days, but no. The only watches, all the crew that you see have got their watches blacked out with gaffer tape on it. You've got no idea of the time whatsoever. So the days last forever, don't they?
Yeah, but I worked out how it No,
you see, that's right, because we did. He was, well, he is a genius anyway, but what happened was, he came in and everybody went, what's the time, Jim? What's the time? Like, what's the time, Mr. Wolf? And he came in and he went, so past 12, whatever time it was. And so what he did, he actually got a stick in the ground and he used it as a sundial with them for the rest of the week until it was got all cloudy.
Yeah. Genius, a sundial. Yeah.
But, do you know, also, I backed that up because the film crew were in giant fiberglass rocks.
Yeah.
It was all real, but there was these big rocks that they put the cameras in and I could hear them inside the rocks, and they used to change over. They used to have a changeover every 8 hours.
Yeah.
So I could hear them, and I thought, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I can hear them going, all right, mate, yeah, all right. Yeah. It's a bit boring in here. Nothing happening. So I knew it was 6 o'clock when I heard them changing over in there.
That's funny, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. That was 16 years ago now.
I know.
Nearly 17 years this year.
And you won it.
Yeah.
Because of your emu escapades.
Yeah, I know it was, wasn't it? That's exactly what done it. I know it was.
What did you do with an emu?
Well,
he fell in love with some emus, and all the public were going, oh, look at Joe with his emus, and he cared for them and tended them.
Yeah, but that was where we first met. Because that was, we did a parachute. You didn't do a parachute jump then, did you?
No, I didn't.
Because this, well, we're supposed to be talking about transport today.
Partly, yes.
Well, you fly, don't you?
Well, this is what I was going to say, because after doing that, we did a parachute jump. Did Nancy do the jump as well?
Yeah, she did it, yeah.
It was great. Have you ever done a parachute jump, Jules?
No.
Would you do one?
Well, I mean, I think that if the plane was in danger or my life depended on it, I would.
But not by choice, then.
I don't think I would be rushing to do it unless there was something.
I've done it a couple since. When you're going down, and I've done solo, I've done it, with a bloke strapped on your back, tandem. And as you're going down, you're going like, terminal velocity, which is like 120 miles an hour, and then you see the ground coming up, and you think, if this don't open, not only am I going to hit the ground at 120 miles an hour, there's a 15 stone bloke strapped to me as well. And it's that point that you think you really could die, that you actually really feel like you're living. It's a really weird, esoterical thing going on in your head.
Yeah.
I suppose the moment of real thing is when you're sitting on the plane about to jump out. That must be quite a
what's
moment.
Really weird is a bloke strapped to your back, and you're like a spider. It's like some sort of, it's like the film The Fly. You're actually sitting there on the outside of the plane with hanging out with your legs out, and he's on his knees behind you and he's kneeling there and you're gripping on the side of the plane, and then he says, you've got to breathe, remember to breathe, because what happens as you're going down, the air is forced into your lungs, and if you don't breathe out, then you're just going to pass out. So the best way to breathe is to scream. So don't worry, I'll be screaming, all right? So he goes one and two, and they always go on two, because on three a lot of people grip on the side, so you don't realize it's going to go, and you literally just roll out and then you just scream. That's what happens.
I don't think I could do it.
No, what you're describing, I mean, I think it's very useful training for when I'm in an out-of-control plane where they've all got food poisoning except me, and I've got to get out.
This is another story. This, because as Jim just said, I've got a pilot's licence. After we did The Jungle, I thought, if I can jump out of planes and helicopters, I should be able to learn to fly. So I've got a pilot's licence. And I've been doing a lot of stuff for the troops. I've been to Belize. I went to Falklands 3 times and Iraq. Got attacked in Iraq. They've tried to mortar us down, all sorts of stuff. But I went to Cyprus and I was doing shows out there for them, and I got asked if I wanted to go up in the Red Arrows, because that's where they train every year. And I don't know about you, but if somebody else says to me, do you want to do something? I'll say, yeah. And if I can't do it, I'll learn how to do it, because I'd rather have a story than go now and go home and say, oh, I got offered to go in the Red Arrows. Did you do it? No, there's no story in that. There's no fun in that. So I said, yeah, okay. So they gave me a full medical, and the week before I'd gone out there, I'd just had a vasectomy as well. I've never told this story ever. So I'd had the vasectomy done, and then they give you a full medical, and I told them about this, and well, you should be okay then. So you get in this Red Arrows thing, and they give you a quick briefing, and the pilot's in the front, and you're in the back seat, but you're higher than him. You know, the passenger is in the
Right, so you're looking over his shoulder.
That's exactly, you're looking over the top of his head. His helmet's there, and then he gives you a briefing that if something goes wrong, I will say eject 3 times. Do not eject on the first eject, do not eject on the second eject, eject on the third eject, because I might change my mind, and I might be able to recover from whatever's going on. So do not eject until the third eject. I said, OK. He said, because I cannot eject for you. He said, and there's a big red lever under the seat. So he said, if you had to say it 3 times, pull that lever. He said, I can't reach around and get that for you. You will have to do it yourself. And by the time I've said eject 3 times, I'll be going myself. So I can't get you out of this. OK, fair enough then.
Cool.
So they stick their thing on, and then they've got this G-suit on as well, which has got all little bladders, all these inner tubes all over it.
What's that for?
They inflate, and they stop all the blood coming from the brain, and it stops the blood going to the major muscle groups. So you've got it round the thighs, round the chest up here, top the arms and round the back of the calves, right? That's where all these bladders go. And you've got this suit on. And as you're starting to do some sort of, you know, manoeuvre, if you're doing the loop-the-loop, these bladders start inflating so the pilot doesn't pass out, so the blood stays in the brain. So bear in mind, I've had the snip about a week ago, and I'm got my boxer shorts on, and he said, would you like to do some manoeuvres? So I said, yeah, what would you like to do? So we're going to do the loop-the-loop. So we're doing the loop-the-loop, and of course these bladders start inflating around my muscle group so that you don't pass out. And of course my privates had fallen down the side of these bladders, and they start inflating, right? And I could feel the pressure on my boys, as it were. And I'm like, oh my God, right? I'm going, you might need to stop this. Said, no, we're going to do it now, sir. Don't bottle out, I'm bad, sir. Don't bottle out. We're going to do this now, sir. No, you don't understand. I said, my knackers has fallen down the side here, and I think I should have told you. I'd have scraped the scream there. And he's going, sir, can you take the microphone off, please? I screamed in my ears. And I came down, and it burst my stitches. Had to sew me up again.
Oh, no.
And back.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and after that,
particularly
I thought,
brave.
Yeah, it was really odd, but I didn't know they was there because these things just inflate everywhere.
But you couldn't sort of look down them and be tapping them on the back of the
like
helmet and say,
I did like to do that.
It's a long explanation, yeah. But I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
He was a bit busy at the time.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So flying with you, would that be a safe occasion?
No, most people won't even sit on a settee with me, let alone getting a plane. I did have a plane, I did buy one, and it was one of those follies that you get and you go, oh, it's a waste of time, it's because you don't spend enough time in the air to really want buying it. And then I had something called a Yak-52, which was a Russian military thing.
I know
thing.
That. You had one of those?
Yeah, the Yak-52, yes. Great plane,
with
wasn't
guns
it?
On it?
Yeah, well, no, I had no guns on it. It's been decommissioned, but yeah, it's a proper, like, it was like a Russian Spitfire, as well. It's like yours. It's amazing.
Fantastic.
Plane.
Painted in camouflage colours.
It was
great. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. It was like clouds all over. It was like proper grey. It was like Russian colour camouflage because they don't have the same camouflage that we have because they've got bad weather. And the thing is with those, they're proper tanks in the air. And if you have an engine failure on that, they just drop out of the sky. And it used to
because of the weight of them.
Yeah, and they're just not aerodynamically built to glide either. They're literally a war aircraft.
That's a proper aeroplane you had then.
Yeah, it was.
Not like a Cessna.
But I never flew it on my own. I always went with my instructor. I was too scared to fly it on my own because it was just it's like learning to drive in a minute, then going into Formula One straight away. It was just too big a beast for a novice like me to go and fly.
Did the Russians sell it to you?
Yeah, it was all in Russian. That was a thing because all the instructions, you know, all the dials is all in. You know, what's that saying there?
Yeah, we're above the channel. We're in trouble. Yeah. Quick, look in the handbook. Oh, it's in Russian.
Yeah, it was that. Yeah. Everything was in Russian. So that's what I was going to say. I used to fly to France occasionally. I'd go to Le Touquet, go and get an omelette and chips on the beach, and then get back in time for X Factor, and that was it. And that'd be a Saturday.
Fantastic.
I went in a little light aircraft to La Tuca and went to the casino there.
Did you?
Yeah, I won £800 and then got back in it and came back home again.
But that's a pretty good day out.
That was a good day out, yeah. That paid for the flight.
I went to Iraq, I was saying before, and there was me, Catherine Jenkins. Remember, you know Catherine?
Yes.
You must know Catherine, don't you? And Gary Rhodes, the chef. And we went for Christmas. Me and Catherine was going to do the show, and Gary Rhodes, the chef, was going to do a big Christmas dinner for him. And we got off at the place in Baghdad, and they've got this great big plate, great helicopter, and we're going across these fields, and everything's on fire. It wasn't long after all that sort of been going on, and it's like an oddity. It was a really weird sensation because it is a war zone, but you feel like you're in the middle of a film. And we're flying along, and they've got all the musicians there, and all the band's gear, all the kit are in the middle, all strapped down, and we're sitting around the edge of this old band's gear, and then all of a sudden this siren starts going off, the klaxon, and this big red flashing light in the back, and then this computerised voice comes out going, missile alert, missile alert, missile alert, and we're laughing, oh look, missile alert, like that. And of course there's some bloke on the ground got this mortar thing, and he fired it at us, and then they set this chafe off at the side, you know, to try and to get this rocket to go and chase that, and we're still going, oh look what's going on there. I don't think we took on the seriousness of what was going on. This bloke was trying to shoot us down. And,
with a guided missile.
Yeah, with a guided missile from the ground.
You
right?
just kept, instead of reversing to training, you kept going, this is a laugh.
I know, this is exactly what we're doing, right? And then, what was really, so this chafe goes off, and then you hear it explode about a couple of hundred feet behind. You go, oh, that nearly got us, didn't it? It's like being in a movie. And then we land, and you do the show, and you come back, and you go, did that really happen? And it didn't, sure. None of it seemed real, but it was. And you look back and you go, wow, this is really weird, this.
It's quite tricky. In helicopters, I've been in a few, and twice I've been told that there's no radar, and I was once going down these cliffs, and there was a lot of those jets coming over the top.
Yeah.
I said, "How do you?" To the helicopter pilot, I said, "How do you know when the jets are coming?" He said, "You just look around." He says, "And if you see one, you duck out of the way." Yeah.
They said to us when we got to the base, right? They went, "If we're expecting a mortar attack tonight because I've seen the helicopters coming in. So if that happens," and my agent had said to me as well, he went, "I'm not going to send you to Iraq and not come with you. I'll come with you." I said, "Okay, fair enough." So he comes with us, and I went, "We are expecting being mortared tonight. If that happens, you hear the alarm go off, the lights will go into emergency mode, and then we need you to climb under the bed, and you've got a flak jacket on all the time, keep your flak jacket on with you all the time, and your helmet no further than arm's length away." So we looked at the beds, and there's about 2-inch gap underneath it. So, there's no room to get under the bed. Well, if you've got no clearance under the bed, you get in the wardrobe. Okay. And then about 2:30 in the morning, of course, the alarms go off, and we go looking at each other, going, is this real then or what? All we've got on is a flak jacket and a pair of pants. We put our helmet on, and we sit in this wardrobe for the next 3 hours, right? And he had the real bad wind. He was farting like a yak, right?
Very bad in a wardrobe, enclosed wardrobe situation.
It was really bad. And I sat there, going, I can't believe this is show business. I'm sitting in a wardrobe. In
this
Iraq.
Is why I went into show business.
Yeah. With my pants on and a flak jacket, and you're blowing off all night. I'd rather be on my own.
And a packet of wine gums.
And no teeth.
The other thing you were talking about on the way in, which is fascinating, which I didn't realise that you were in fact an expert on, is Dracula.
Yeah, I've done Masterminds. You've done Masterminds, Jim, haven't you?
Yeah.
What did you do it on?
The Golden Age of Piracy, 1680 to 1720.
Well, have you done it, George?
Yeah. No, I should have a go.
Oh, you should have a go. You'd be great at it. I've done it 3 times. First time was on vampires in the movies. Second time was werewolves of the movies. And then the last one, I did it on Planet of the Apes. I've never won. I've always come, you know, got all the things right on my specialist subject. And then John Humphreys always says, have a guess if you don't know it, you know, on the general knowledge. And I remember once he said, what's the current Pope's Christian name? And I didn't know, so I just went, Kevin. And of course he laughed about 30 seconds, wasted so much time, I came last because he was laughing. But going back to Dracula, I grew up in Essex in Grays. And in the original story, he goes to Purfleet. And he buys this place called the Carfax Estate. And when I was a kid, I was growing up around that way. And me and my mate Kevin Bloss used to ride on our chopper bikes down to Carfax Estate.
Oh, what a lovely sight. What colour was your chopper?
Mine was blue.
Oh, lovely. Yeah,
we had three gears on it.
Yes,
remember
exactly,
that?
Did you have one? With a little orange changer thing inside the gears.
You must have had one, Jim, didn't you?
I didn't have one then when they were first out, but I did get one later on when they were reintroduced.
That's
and
right,
I got a free one.
They weren't quite as good though when they were reintroduced.
No, because they didn't have the gears on.
No, they didn't.
Anyway, going back, so you're there on your chopper with the gears.
So I became obsessed with Dracula, and so hence I want to go to Whitby as well. I want to live up there now. I started writing horror books a few years ago. I did a few courses with the Open University. I did geology, geoscience with the Open University. And then I started doing creative writing. And from that, I started writing horror books. And I've got a couple published. And then the great-great-grandnephew of Bram Stoker has approached me only in the past few months, commissioned me to write a book of short horror stories under something called, they're calling it the Stokerverse. They're doing new comics and trying to get the brand back to the way Bram Stoker wanted it 120 odd years ago, because
how incredible. But that's also, may I say, you are the best example of application we've ever had on this show, because you taught yourself to fly. Well, you went there and flying. Inside our flying lesson, so you learned to fly.
Yeah,
you know, you've it's a kind of creative writing course, and now you've had two published novels about Dracula.
Stories.
Talk about getting it done. That's admirable.
Yeah, but you two are like that.
Have you ever studied anything, and then apart from a driving test, anything?
I study things off my own back, not on an open university. I like to get study things intently.
Well, what was your education, though? What was your background education, though, Jim, if you don't mind me asking?
I think when I was at school, it was in they said in the Times that it was in the top five worst schools in Britain.
Was it just a state school then? What was it?
Yeah.
Oh, so I just went to comprehensive school.
Yeah, that's where I went. Yeah. But I learned a lot out of school, and like especially of parents and things like that. That's where you learn things, isn't it?
What about motor vehicles? Are you keen on those, or trains, or anything, boats, any of those things?
The best train ride I ever did was in Peru, and that was going from Cusco to Machu Picchu. Have you done Machu Picchu?
No.
Have you done Machu Picchu?
No.
How can you two are the most well-travelled people in the world, and you know the Machu Picchu?
No,
Machu Picchu, right, in Peru.
We have both two of the most well-travelled Victorians in Britain.
Machu Picchu, right, it's a great train from Cusco to Machu Picchu, right? And I went with my mate Kev, who we used to go to see Dracula with, Dracula the Ghost. It was him. And he had a brain problem a long time ago, and he thought he was going to go, and they operated on him, he saved his life, and ever since then he sold his house and just travels. And he phoned me up once, he went, "I'm in Peru, do you fancy coming down?" So I went, yeah, and I just went.
Peru, do you fancy coming down? Yeah, why not?
It was that.
Did you fly yourself there?
No, I didn't, a bit too far, Bigel, so I got a normal plane. And I went down there, right, and I met him in Cusco, and we went to Machu Picchu, and he'd found this witch doctor bloke that was a local down there. And it is just the most amazing place I'd ever been to in the world. And there's two mountains beside it. And because he was a local, he lived around there. We got there before all the tourists got there. And you get up at the break of dawn, see the sun coming up, and all these buildings, some of them like the irrigation stuff, but it's all on these layers, it's all built on layers. And some of the irrigation stuff, as the sun shines on it, it looks like a snake coming down. It was done on purpose, not just an accident. It's built like the sun shines on it, and you get the shadow of a giant snake going down the hill.
And how old are the buildings?
Well, they're still not sure. They reckon there's a couple of thousand years old, that no one really knows anymore. They're still not quite sure why they built it up there. So this witch doctor bloke takes us up the side of the mountain. He says, "Right, okay, we're going to climb that mountain today." I go, "Really?" "Yeah, and it's so dangerous. You know, you have to sign a book in case you don't come back. They know you fell off the side." We go up the top, and he gets a load of stuff out of his bag. He's got a little satchel with him. And he said, "We're going to make a sacrifice now to Pichu Mama, I think, which is the god in the sky." Okay, fair enough, then, whatever that is.
But you didn't get worried that the sacrifice might have been
yourself. Well, I thought one of us. Yes. I've got to kill Kev, or Kev's got to kill me. And all we had to do was give him something that was personal, that was ours. And I like crystals, and I had a little tiny bit of quartz crystal, which I gave him. And he buries it in the ground, right? He buries this, and then he gives you a couple of these little, voodoo dolls and sweets and all sorts of stuff, and you wrap it in a piece of paper, and you put a bit of wool around it, and you bury it, and then he lights a fire, and then he grabs his great big condor wing, he gets out of this bag, and then he starts blowing the smoke and starts chugging, doing all this with the condor wing, the smoke, and we're at the top of this mountain, looking down on Machu Picchu. Then all of a sudden, it was the weirdest thing ever. It started lightning, the thunder started coming out of nowhere, and this cloud just descended on us. I thought, oh no, it's like being the Exorcist now. It was one of the most amazing experiences ever.
That's quite extraordinary.
It really was, yeah.
Blimey, that's the thing. So, you know, of course, I was reading, I met, actually, we should invite her on, Bethany Hughes, who's a television archaeologist, but she's a great noted archaeologist. And she said to me that she's been investigating the earliest musical instruments. What she found was that the people, she said, she called it relatively modern times, which is about 1400 BC, but she said that's modern because they're building the pyramids then. They're not Stone Age people. They're building the pyramids and all of that. So anyway, around about then, if they found instruments that the ancients were playing. She said they were playing pipes made of heron's shin bones. So I said, well, they must be very small. She said, well, no, because we have just discovered that there are herons. We've just dug up these herons, which, in fact, would have been about 7 foot tall and had a 10-foot wingspan.
You're
but they were hunted down. What an idea. A heron that was that big.
Well, that was the first musical instrument that is known.
Well, one of the earliest, yes.
So wow. There's a lot of flute symphonies.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then with the extinction, where the heron was hunted down, that was the end of that instrument, you see.
Yeah.
You know, so you get the people...
Oh, so they've killed all the big giant herons.
Yeah, yes.
In favour of flutes.
Yeah.
Wow. Joe, I've been wanting to ask you this for a long time.
Oh, I hate it when you say that. Well...
Because I wanted to do a programme, which was turned down years ago, about Richard Dadd. He was a very famous Victorian fairy painter. They really are incredible. Then he murdered his dad. He took his dad out for a drink, murdered his dad, then ran off and got on a ferry to France, then got on a coach and tried to murder someone else. And he got caught and taken to Broadmoor, where he spent the rest of his life. But if you look on Wikipedia, it says he murdered his dad in a hollow which is on Joe Pasquale's land. And you didn't know about it?
No. See, I didn't know. I'd heard that story, but I didn't even think it was real, right? But I didn't know his name was Richard Dadd. But I knew that someone had killed his dad. I didn't know it was the same bloke that was tied in there then.
Yeah, that was him, oh, Richard Dadd.
That's a cheerful little story. It's all happened when is this? The early 19th century?
No, it was a late Victorian fairy painter, when fairies were really popular.
Yeah. Nice.
About the same time as Dracula.
People then... had a sort of a, you know, where they, you know, I'll just throw this theory out to you both, as we're both thinkers, and the listeners can maybe muse on this as well. You know, where people had come from the ancient dark ages of superstition and that, and then in the 18th century and the Enlightenment comes and they're all thinking, you know, about a science and things like this. And then by the end of the 19th century, maybe they're all thinking, well, we will need a bit more fantasy. So they've got fairies and they've got fairy painters, they've got Dracula, they've got all of this sort of fantastic sort of stuff coming along, you know.
Well, you think about Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, same sort of time.
Have you ever seen a fairy?
No, I don't think so.
Have you?
No, have you?
I've seen a dragonfly, which I believe is a fairy.
Oh, you're an angry one, though.
Well, I suppose that's what the... You know, if you look at pictures, old Victorian pictures of fairies, they're pretty much just a dragonfly. So maybe it was just wishful thinking. Because you see those... You know those photographs... That I can't remember his name, the Reverend someone who took pictures of fairies in his garden.
Oh, the two little girls did it, didn't they?
Yeah.
And everybody bought it. They went, oh, these fairies.
Yeah, they thought they're real. Yeah.
That's but I'm always fascinated, right?
Photoshopping I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, and that was 120 years ago as well. I'm always fascinated by dinosaurs though, because before they found the bones, it was only about 150 years ago that they found the bones. Before that, they didn't even exist. So there could be other stuff out there that we don't know about.
Well, I've always held this about the unicorn, you see.
Yeah.
I went around the caves in Lascaux, wherever it is in France, where these two children stumbled in the 1940s, stumbled across these caves, found their way in, and said to their parents, you better come and see this. And the most incredible Stone Age paintings of buffaloes and unicorns and stuff all over the walls, you know, anyway. And the bloke's showing us round, we're going to have a look. He says, and here you can see all of the creatures that Stone Age man saw. There's the buffalo that he would hunt down, and there is the sheep that he would have kept, and there is, you know, there's the forest he would have painted these. He said, and he's put this fantasy beast, the unicorn, in there. And I said, hold on a minute. I said, if he's painted all those other things, and it's like a really long time ago, why do you think that? Why is he making up a unicorn? That's a funny thing to make up. He hasn't made up anything else.
No.
So therefore, I put it to you that it could be possibly that a unicorn exists.
I can't see any reason why not.
No, do I?
If I was going to ride into battle, it would be on either a unicorn or a lion.
Unicorn for you, Jim.
Or a pterodactyl would be quite good.
Pterodactyl is my favourite dinosaur.
It's a great guy. What do we know about the pterodactyl?
What do you want to know?
What do you need to know?
What size were they?
Well, this is what I'm really fascinated.
40-foot wingspan?
Was it 40-foot, do you reckon?
I reckon, yeah.
The thing is, this is what's really fascinating about dinosaurs, is everything we've seen there, it's all made up still. Like the colours of them, they don't know the colour of it. They could have been blue for all we know.
Yeah.
But when you see Jurassic Park films, there was no skin. They would find his bones and go, I reckon it was green.
I reckon they were really brightly coloured.
I reckon they were as well.
Do you think? I think they wore makeup, lipstick, and
pterodactyl lipstick on.
Yeah,
yeah. But if you did chapstick. Jurassic Park with psychedelic dinosaurs, people would just leave the cinema laughing, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they wouldn't be very frightened. But I think you're right. Bearing in mind it is modern times that they've discovered all this stuff, so who knows? What would you like to find under there, Joe, if you could find? What would we?
You know what? Sort of, this is really fascinating now, because only in the 1970s, plate tectonics was only discovered in the 1970s, right? That you know, nobody thought the plates were moving until the 1970s. So there is so much stuff under that we don't know. And because of plate tectonics, you know, the oldest rocks on Earth are like half a billion years old or whatever it is. Because before that, this is all going to be disappeared in half a billion years' time. What's here now is going to be gone. Every trace of us will be gone as well. You might have these aliens, right, come down in half a billion years' time, and you have these geologists come down. They won't find a trace of us here. Go, oh, this planet is completely deserted, and we don't know what was before us because it's all changed.
They might just find the very tip of Canary Wharf sticking out of a great ocean somewhere.
They could find anything.
Say there was some civilization lived here.
Yeah, it could be a bit of Perfleet left.
Have you ever seen an alien? Because I think I did last week.
Well, recently?
Honestly, I was in York, sitting out on a balcony.
Yeah.
And I looked up in the sky, and there was four lights in a square, and they all went off in different directions. And one of them I followed, and it went right across the sky and then stopped. So what we decided was it was either aliens or some kind of
military thing.
Military.
Where did you
science.
Say? Where did you, can I say? Where were you sitting outside? Did you say a pub?
No, it was on a balcony outside of an Airbnb in York.
Just checking here.
There was no drink involved. Yeah. If that's the way that you, that's what your angle is.
I was just exploring that possibility. That was all.
So come on, what did you see?
Well, I was coming back from a gig at Butlins. This was 20 years ago. I was driving down the M4, and I lived in Lowestoft at the time. And this is before everybody had phones with cameras on, so you couldn't take pictures. And I was driving down the M4, coming up to Reading, somewhere like that, and there was a field on the left-hand side, and I saw this great big light come down, and it actually landed in a field, right, there were cows in there. And then everybody said beforehand that if you see an alien spaceship or anything like that, you have to draw it to remember it if you haven't got a camera with you. So I was living in Lowestoft, so by the time I got back home, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and they said to, and when I say they, I don't know who they are, but they reckon if you painted it and drew this picture, you have to take it to the police station and report it. So of course, I'll go home, get my paints out, I paint what I saw, this alien ship coming down with cows. I actually painted the cows as well, which they didn't need to see. I painted the cows and everything around it. And I went to the police station. By then, it was about 6 o'clock in the morning. I saw this copper, and he seemed like I was really excited and panicky. He went, "What's the matter?" I went, "I've seen an alien spaceship." And he just looked at me, right, and he went, "Where?" So I said, "On the M4 near Reading." And he went, "Why are you telling me?" So I said, "Well, I've done a painting of it." And as I was saying this, I figured, oh, God, I sound a bit divvy there, don't I? And I went, I painted it for you. He went, "Why are you giving it to me?" So I thought, you had to paint it and then show it to a policeman. He went, "Why?" I said, "Well, in case we get invaded, you have to tell someone." He went, "I don't think they're going to come to Lowestoft, are they?" So I said, "Well, they might do."
That was a bad thing to say. Why shouldn't they come to Lowestoft? What's the matter with Lowestoft?
I know. So he went, "You know, my shift finishes in half an hour. I really don't need this." So I went, "What should I do with it?" He went, "Take it home, put it on your wall if you like." And I said, "I'm not interested." So I thought, "We could be killed, they could be everywhere." He went, "Well, they're not, are they? Just go home, will you?" And I went home with this paint. I've still got the painting at home. I didn't know what to do with it. I felt right, div.
And here, a message from our sponsors. I bought a dog from a blacksmith. As soon as I got it home, it made a bolt for the back door.
I bet it wasn't as good as the door locks and bolts I get from Locks of Love in Loughton.
Joe, have you ever seen Uranus through a telescope?
Oh. Oh.
Did it? You can't call it Uranus anymore. You have to call it your arsehole.
I can't believe you went there.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa. You were a red coat, weren't you?
I was a green coat, in actual fact. Yeah.
What's the difference?
Well, red coats was Butlins, and green coats were...
Red coats were communists.
Green coats were environmentally...
Yeah, that's exactly
what friendly. Green party, and then the blue coats told blue jokes.
I was for Warners, you see. I wanted Warners holiday camps. And you had to do everything. You had to call the bingo, referee the wrestling, do the whist drives, tea dances, you know, the darts tournaments. And you also had to be a lifeguard. And I remember a bloke, and the pool that we had there wasn't that deep. It was only like 3 foot six, 4 foot, something like that. And I was sitting on the plastic chairs in my flip-flops, and I just kept an eye on all these, because it was an adults-only camp as well, so there's no kids there. And this bloke, he was quite an old bloke at the time, he was very tall, and I knew he only had one eye. And so as he's walking around the pool, his right eye was one that he had a glass eye in, so he couldn't see the signs on the walls, you know, because on the other side, you know, saying no diving. Of course, he dives in, and he bangs his head on the pool.
Oh.
On the bottom of the pool, and he gets up, and there's a couple of old ladies in the swimming pool, and he gets up, and he doesn't know, because he can't see out of it. Obviously, he's got no feeling in it. He's lost his glass eyes. Glass eyes popped out.
Oh.
And these old girls go, oh, look, he's lost an eye, like that, and they didn't know it was a glass eye that popped out. It looked like he just lost an eye. And so the bloke's going, what? And he didn't know. He cracked his head. He was all right, had a bit of concussion. And he put his hand there. Well, oh, my eye's gone, like that. And all these old ladies are really screaming. He said, no, it's all right, it's a glass eye, don't worry. And his glass eye was blue, which was the same colour as the bottom of the pool was painted, so you couldn't see it. So I had to get in and try and find this bloke's glass eye. And everybody's got out except for me and this bloke in there looking for his glass eye. And we couldn't find it, obviously, and it was in there for ages. And eventually, because you're diving under, you can't see it because it's the same colour as the pool. And in the end, we were trying to feel it with our feet, and I felt it. I got it in between my big toe and my long toe and next to it. And I pulled my toe out of the water, and it was literally, I had it between my toes like that.
Oh.
And he plucked it out of my toes. He went, oh, you found it. And he just put it back in his eye.
Oh.
And he
shot it. Between your toes?
Yeah. I was like, he could get a verruca off of that in a week.
Oh, verruca on the eye.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it was that Sammy Davis Jr. So.
Yeah.
God, that was a thing.
Well, that draws us fantastically to a close.
Yes.
Of our wonderful time with Joe Pasquale.
Yeah, what a fantastic journeyman he's been.
Oh,
everywhere.
Thank you.
What an example, great example of a man that can teach himself things. I mean, that's an example to us all, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Joe Pasquale.
Thank you, boys.
Well, there goes Joe in a red arrow towards his bunker that's filled with wine gums.
I think it's filled with wine gums, and he's when he gets to the bunker, he's going to eject.
We'll wish him all the best. This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.